Hello, my name is Marjorie Wingrove, and I'm the host of Death Happens, broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio 92.7 CFFF. I've created this show as a way to normalize the conversation around death-related topics. Death is inevitable for every living thing. I believe knowledge and preparation can create some comfort and peace of mind. My guest today is Krista Brenner. Krista is a death doula with so many talents to offer in her practice, and we're talking about some of her experiences today. To start off, Krista has chosen Dream On by Aerosmith.
Thank you. Welcome, Krista Brenner, to Death Happens.
Thank you.
You're a death doula, but maybe you can tell me what led you to that calling.
I guess it always was within my scope of who I was, being raised within the funeral services. So my grandfather was the caretaker of a cemetery. And so I grew up honoring the dead, and I grew up that whole capacity of really caring for the deceased. As I got older, I received a significant loss, which was my brother in 2000 from a car accident. And I had just graduated school of being a recreation therapist when all of a sudden I was faced with a life decision of, wait a second, now I don't want to do this. And I want to go into the funeral director role, but just didn't work out at that time. And so I had it in the back of my head through life. I lost my job that I was working as a rec therapist in 2015. And it really resonated with me that I needed to follow that path to be a funeral director. And then I found out that I was allergic to formaldehyde. You can't embalm bodies if you're allergic to formaldehyde. My mom actually was watching the news one night and saw this CBC news article on a Thena doula and sent it to me and said, maybe this is what you could do. That's where it started. And now I've discovered from working as a doula, there's a huge gap within our system. I went back to school in September to take funeral transfer service sales representative program. So I thought I could be able to go one step beyond being the doula in being able to transport the deceased individuals and help, but I couldn't find placement. In December, I completed the funeral pre-planning course. So in April 20th, actually, I go to write my exam, to my jurisprudence test. So hopefully I'll have my license as a funeral pre-planner. And I'm registered to start the funeral director program in Humber, but instead of the regular funeral director role, I'm going to go as a class two, which would be non-embalming. So green burials through and through.
Let's talk about how natural burial or green burial fits into the culture of funeral homes right now.
It is a small niche within the funeral industry currently. It will only get larger. It has to. Because just within our current system, we don't have room for things. And there's so many beautiful possibilities with green burials all over Ontario. The current structure, it's very much geared to the traditional funeral sense.
What different kinds of burial would come under the heading of green burial? Is it very specific, or are there different types of natural burial?
So natural, if you're going to find any, you can Google green burial sites, but they are all very specific. So generally speaking, there's no headstones. So there's no markers as well. Some will be just shrouds you can bury in. Some you have to be in a rigid container. So it all depends on the cemetery. So the one in Niagara, for example, is just shrouds. You don't need a container. Whereas Waterloo, you need a container.
Well, and that leads me to another thing that you do. You are now creating kits to make a shroud.
Yes. I started through Sindia. I found the pattern to make a shroud. I was actually going to start making them last year, but then COVID happened and I started making masks and halted the shroud making. And then this year I'm like, okay, now I'm done and I still want to sew. So let's try the shrouds. And as I was making, I made three to start with. And I thought, what a personalized thing this is. And the fact if somebody else can sew, and if I have the material, I'll just cut it out, prepare it, and somebody can add their own personal touch to it. With the instructions I have through Sindia, so I made kits that really incorporate the best of both. So it's the thinking, the cutting, everything's done. I prepare everything. I have thread in the box. I've got the material all cut, everything's set, and the instructions. So you can add your own personal pieces to it and your own finishing touches to it.
Mm-hmm. When I think of that, you know, I think about being able to do silk appliques or embroidery with organic threads. Really, that's as long as you're using biodegradable or organic materials, really the sky's the limit.
Right.
For what you can do to those shrouds.
Right. Well, and I just mailed one to Manitoba, was where it went. And I never met this person. She is making it with her mother. Beautiful journey to be able to connect with your parent and make a shroud for them, right? What an honor. So they're incorporating material from her father that had passed away. So how beautiful is that? When her mom is buried, she's going to have her daughter that's incorporating within this shroud, as well as her husband who's going to be with her. I was like, oh my gosh, that is just lovely.
That's really beautiful. I have a friend who said that she wants to be buried in her favorite sweater because she wants to be warm. So I thought that's another niche that somebody could get into is knitting organic sweaters to be worn when you're buried.
Great idea.
So you're cozy.
Great idea. Or even socks.
Mm-hmm. And socks. Right. Oh, I love that. You do a lot of things. As a doula, you do the recreational therapy, bereavement coaching, aromatherapy, yeah, and Reiki. I'd love to talk about how each of those things benefit your clients.
So I can tell you, I had a family that I served in October, and what an honor it was to serve this family. Started as the doula. It was for the mother who was dying. She was palliative. She had lung cancer. Her husband had a significant grief that he was working through and really was going through caregiver burden because day programs were closed, everything was shut down, and he was now solely responsible for this lady. And he really very much needed a break. And that was where I kind of came in on that level. His daughter contacted me. The daughter, who I had known prior, she connected me with this family, and the dad just was a mess when I first started working with him, majorly burnt out. And so I first met with him, and I would go for walks with him and just really get to know how he was. And so I started there, and that built a relationship with him first. And then I met his wife. His wife was beautiful. Absolutely beautiful, very religious lady, very Catholic. With her, I tapped into Catholicism that I had learned from a kid and said prayers with her and really connected with her as her spirit was. So that was my place with her. So I had those two dynamics that were happening at the same time. I then met with each one of his daughters or her daughters, and there was three daughters. Through each one, I would spend an hour or so getting to know, going out for coffee, just meeting them and connecting with them and getting to know their spirit, their how they worked and how they were connected to their mom, any stories they could tell me about their mom. And really got to know the foundation of the family and what a loving, beautiful family. I followed them from beginning to the very end. I was at their funerals, at the mother's funeral service. And then afterwards, how I really helped was each one of them, because I'm trained with Reiki as well as Indian head massage. So it's a full treatment from beginning, from top to bottom of a human being, and really connecting to their energy and really pulling out that stagnant energy or the sad energy and really offering that therapeutic touch that people so desperately need, especially when they're grieving. It was beautiful because they trusted me enough to help them with their grief afterwards and the children that were going through the grief. And I've done, have regular treatments with the kids and the daughters that I see still. And I still am connected with the father as well too, but it was a whole family event, and grief doesn't just end when someone dies. That's where it starts. And that was when I was learning all of my stuff. That was exactly what I wanted to be able to do, follow a family from beginning to end.
That's amazing. That really is the goal of being a doula, is helping a family through that. That's what we're here for.
Yeah.
And how does Reiki benefit? What is the energy transition that somebody goes through?
It all depends on the person. It depends on how open a person is. It's a series of basically hand placements on the body, but it's not moving. It's being present. It's holding that space, and it's being comfortable to be holding that space. It allows people, I think, when they're in that situation, to be able to connect to that other energy that's within their space, and being okay with having somebody hold, like I will hold feet, for example, for like 10 minutes, 15 minutes, just holding that space, and people feeling safe and comforted, and all of those emotions that you have just from basic human touch, I think. Mm-hmm.
And you use crystals in your therapy as well.
Yes. I kind of do that in between so I start always with the Indian head massage, where I release energies. It's kind of like from the mid back up through the head. And I relax the muscles in the face, the neck, the back of the skull, that whole location. That's where we hold our stress. That's where we hold a lot of our anxieties, our energies, our everything. So then I move on and I have different crystals. So I remember learning years ago on crystals when my grandparents were young and they would teach me about the different properties of like amethyst, how it's mined, and learning about the beliefs of the land. I use ones that I know are the history of them or where they come from. And so my biggest one is amethyst because it's found right here in Ontario. It's shaped like a wand. So each human has meridian lines and that's how our energy is stored. So I have a map that I follow and I follow the meridian lines of the body. I kind of outline with this wand. So I'm using nature to connect within a human person.
Yes, that makes sense to me. Like I said, you do so many things.
Well, how I got into, I guess, really into being a doula for the most part came working in long-term care. Being the rec person, I was the only person sometimes that got that one-on-one time with people. You have in a long-term care, you have nurses, you have PSWs, you have all of those people, and nobody spends quality time with anybody. It's the rec people that do.
That floors me that there are so many people who work so intimately with people in long-term care, but don't have a connection to them, to the,
right.
to the clients, to the patients. Wow.
So as rec, there may be one staff on every floor, and that's the one that's responsible for doing all the spiritual aspect. There's chaplains, but generally the rec support have to do that because PSWs are there cleaning, right? They're changing, they're cleaning, they're dressing, they're feeding. There's no emotional care whatsoever. That all falls on rec people, all of it. And I saw that need huge. I held the hands of many people as they were dying in my rec role. That was a for sure.
I can't imagine being in that kind of role and not having a connection with the people I'm caring for. But I guess that's why we have so many problems in long-term care.
For sure. My focus within long-term care to always spend time with the palliative because they're the ones that don't get any programming. They get nothing. They are the ones who are left with just nursing. They're the ones left with PSWs. A lot of times rec people, and it's not to fault any of them, but they're not comfortable with death. Right? They're comfortable with having fun with people and engaging with people. For me, that's an anomaly because people in the rec role generally want the ones who are active, the ones that can engage. But I know there's a strong majority in long-term care that don't have that capability.
Right.
I've worked at quite a few different long-term care, and it's the same within any of them that I've worked in.
You know that my mind right now is giving jobs to doulas. We're needed.
Oh, in long-term care, retirement is different. Long-term care is all mandated by the government, right? So it's less money and things. Mm-hmm. I hope it changes. I'm really hopeful.
So when a person is looking for the services of a doula, what kinds of things should they consider? And how easy is it to find a doula, do you think?
It's if people know what they are. That's the thing. And I think in general speaking, people don't know exactly what a doula is. We need more education. We need to promote it more, I think is the big one. You need to find a doula that can listen, really, for the most part, somebody who can really deeply listen. Yeah. So finding somebody that doesn't kind of come with their own agendas, that is open, that can help and that can listen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It sounds, the family you described, it just sounds like you were such a beautiful fit for them, are such a beautiful fit for them.
Oh, beautiful family to deal with. Yeah, I think back to that service and holy smokes, when we did the funeral, when they had the funeral, is the doula, this is where it really made me think to go back to school to be a funeral director was the big one, because as the doula, you step out, as soon as death happens, you remove yourself and the funeral homes go in. And I'm like, whoa, I don't want to leave. Like I really got a problem with this. I don't want to stop serving them. I don't want to stop helping them, but I had to. The laws don't allow me to stay. When I remember going to the funeral service, and at that time, this was in the end of beginning of November, there was 50 people out of the service. It was beautiful, absolutely beautiful. And I think back, if we would have had the same, if it was just halted by a couple of months, it would have been 10 people. And it's just very different times.
Explain to me what the laws are about having to step away once death happens. What is your involvement with the person after they've passed?
So you can be there, you can be present, As a doula, as long as the family, you are supporting the family. But as the doula, you cannot transport the body. The family can transport the body, but you as the doula cannot transport the body. You need to involve somehow, you can have the body in a home up to 3 days before you need to kind of tip off officials. When you have a funeral director involved, it's like everything's different. And the rules are, you need it, like in so many capacities, because there's so many laws within the bereavement Ontario.
Mm-hmm. What are the laws about being hands-on with the dying person and then the body?
So in those times, the laws are you can't be paid once somebody dies. So that's where the big difference is. So it's all voluntary. You're there just assisting the family. You're kind of those extra arms for the family. It's not for your own benefit in those situations after death, unless you're in the funeral director role. But as the doula, you cannot legally do that. You can help family, and family can do it, but you as the doula cannot.
Mm-hmm. What does a family need to do if they choose to keep the body of their loved one in the house for 3 days?
Ideally, a good way to do it would be if you could contact a funeral home or a funeral director if you know somebody and have it registered that way. Every funeral director I've talked to, they will definitely supervise this and help with this. So you have those capacities. You could have a doula, but you again need to have the family really well educated, and the family needs to really know the laws in and around death. And they're easily educated, they're easily portrayed through the Bereavement Authority of Ontario's guide. It breaks down all the things a family can do, which is a lot. Family can do an awful lot. And the doula's role is to support it.
Mm-hmm. So you were present in person for the funeral. What was that like in these times?
Yeah, I sat next to the funeral director. It was interesting. It was weird because it was almost like as if I was handing it off to her. And it was a very weird dynamic, but it worked. And she acknowledged my role within the situation, and I acknowledged hers. It was really actually beautiful. We sat at the back of the church, and the family was involved, and we greeted the family like together, the two of us. It was really actually a really beautiful service.
Mm-hmm. That's so ideal and so respectful.
For sure.
Oh, I love hearing that. Have you been to any funerals where in the last year where you have not been allowed to be present?
No, I officiated my first funeral on the leap day of last year. So right before everything shut down, and I officiated a funeral. Oh my gosh, it had the capabilities of being an extremely large funeral. Luckily, it was just family. He was the chief fire mechanic for the Kitchener Fire Department, as well as a World War II veteran. So here was an esteemed, honorable man, right? There was huge honor. That was the funeral I officiated. I'm like, holy smokes. But it was right before COVID. That could have been a massive funeral, massive, because we would have had city officials. There would have been so many dignitaries there. Family just wanted family. There was 10 people.
Wow. What I found beneficial about having funerals online, you know, for sure there are lots of detriments, but what was great is I was able to be at funerals that I would not otherwise have been able to get to.
Right. Online is amazing.
Yeah. One was in PEI and one was near Oshawa. You know, certainly very sparse, watching just super close family and nobody else there, which had kind of a lonely feeling, but being able to, you knew that so many other people were watching the funeral at the same time. And, you know, you're encouraged to get up and sing and pray and do all the things. So it was still very profound and meaningful, but hard to not be in the room with other mourners.
Yeah, because people need people in that time of need.
Mm-hmm. Just the lack of contact is very hard in those situations.
I had the absolute honor at the end of February. I spent a week. So I have my application to be a funeral director, and through it, I have to do observation hours. I have to do 40 hours. And so I've been following, oh my gosh, the most amazing funeral director. He's a green funeral guy, and he has a business, brand new business in Guelph, Ontario. I've connected with him, and he's been willing to take me on as an intern. And so I followed him around for 1 week. Oh my goodness, what an amazing experience. I had one that I followed from beginning to end. Once we picked up the body, we brought it back to the funeral establishment, washed the body, dressed the body, prepared the body. And then The next day was the service. Because everything was shut down, this guy was awesome. There was no time limits for the viewing of the body. There was just that precious time that was spent with family. It was an honor to sit there and just be part of that whole aspect of it. Just very holistic and very human, just very human. Just having that human spirit, that human connection to know, to understand that grief isn't time limited. It needs time. And yeah, it was an all day event. It wasn't live streamed. It wasn't anything, but it was beautiful to be part of. And it was a very Orthodox faith. So it was a Russian Orthodox minister that came in and did these prayers. It was peaceful. It was beautiful. And the fact that we got to be able to hold 10 people in a space and just with them for the whole afternoon was a gift, really, I think, that what he gave to them, but it was beautiful.
Mm-hmm. I love hearing these stories where the time is really given to the process.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I have a question about green burial. Did this take place in the wintertime?
Can green burial take place in the wintertime?
I guess that's my question. Can green burial take place in the wintertime?
That's a really good question. I really don't know the answer to that question.
It's been on my mind for a couple of weeks.
I'm going to find that out and I'm going to let you know because I know the perfect people to ask, but I really don't know. Sorry. I'm going to say no, just because it goes against the natural system, but I really don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, I haven't reached out to anyone yet to find that answer. I've been letting it sit in my own mind. Well, because my follow-up question to that is, how does the body stay fresh waiting for spring?
Okay, so I know this from being a kid and my grandfather being the cemetery owner and following him around for my whole growing up years. This is how they did it in Mount Forest anyway. There was a house in the back of the Mount Forest Cemetery where all the bodies were held because in the winter, everything was frozen. So it was an outdoor building. It wasn't insulated. It was protected. So you couldn't get into it. But it was just basically a giant freezer. So it held the bodies. And in the spring, they did the burials.
Mm-hmm.
So I can imagine that's what they do for green burials, but I don't know.
Because I was wondering if not being embalmed would have an effect on that. But if the bodies are frozen, then
mm-hmm.
I guess it wouldn't. These are questions I'm pondering right now as I think about planning my own funeral. It's like, you know, can I get a ride to the cemetery? Do I need to be frozen over the winter?
Well, it depends. And my grandpa retired. Oh goodness. I was in my 20s when he retired. So it was up until then, they kept the bodies in the back shed, basically in the winter.
Mm-hmm. And I think there is one of those at the Little Lake Cemetery here in Peterborough.
Look for the storage rooms. Yeah.
Storeroom under the chapel, but I'm not completely sure that it's still there. There's a green burial cemetery in Coburg called
yes.
The Cemetery. It's very pretty.
Mm-hmm. I'm doing a tour of the one in Niagara in the spring. I was told by Mark Robinson, Richardson. Robinson is the gentleman who I'm following for the funeral director. Similar last names. He is the director at the Niagara one. So he suggested that I go in the spring. He said it's the nicest. Mm-hmm. It's an old one. It's one of the oldest. I can imagine there's a lot of history being in Niagara.
Right. Oh my gosh. Yes.
So, and you'd have beautiful fauna and flora. So he was telling me though, so it's kind of the opposite. When I had a big conversation with Mark, he was telling me that they have a vegetable garden in a cemetery. Usually there's signs that don't drink the water, right? So you figure the fact of it's natural burial, it's compostable dirt basically. So they're growing, they have like vegetable sales. They have a farmer's market stand. Isn't that awesome?
Oh yeah, that's
yeah. So there's no signs of don't drink the water. It's eat the food.
From grave to table. Yeah, you're welcome.
Marge.
Let's not be too gruesome for the listeners. There's so much more grave humor. How do we want to wrap this up?
I got a shroud for you.
Oh my goodness, as usual with these interviews, so much more is said that I don't have time to share with you. At some point, I'm going to have to do a show with everybody's ghost stories and other things that we talk about because it's just phenomenal what we talk about. It's so fun. So that was Krista Brenner, and she is a death doula. Her website is The Soul Circle, THESOUL. CIRCLE.ca. My name is Marjorie Wingrove, and you've been listening to Death Happens.